Hi everyone, my guest today is Bill Still. He's written a plethora of books. They're linked below. He's also made a series of films, mostly on central banking. Those are linked below as well. His latest one was Jekyll Island, the movie, not to be confused with the book by Griffin about Jekyll Island, which also goes over a history of central banking and tackles that issue and gives a lot of information about the Federal Reserve. But today, being the 50th anniversary of the John Kennedy assassination, I'd like to have Mr. Still on because he made it a few reports on what's called the Still Report, which are up on YouTube, you can see them free, where he talked about the Kennedys and the Federal Reserve, because there is a myth going around the interwebs that claims that Kennedy was trying to end the Federal Reserve or was fighting with the Federal Reserve, and he had this executive order out which would have done that, and he was killed before it was passed. It's not true, because the executive order was passed, it did nothing of the sort, and Mr. Still has debunked this myth. And I'm glad he's saying it because he's done a lot of work on the Federal Reserve and central banks in general. And he also revealed some very interesting players who may have actually had a role in the Kennedy assassination. So, Mr. Still, welcome to the program. Can you talk about this executive order? What was it? What did it really do? What did it not do? Why is it important?
What was the myth? That Kennedy died because of this executive order, because he was going after the Fed. He wanted to increase the supply of silver certificates and decrease the supply of Federal Reserve notes. And, you know, that sounded like an interesting theory to me. And so when I first heard it and started investigating it, my bias was to try to prove it was correct. But in fact, I proved that it was incorrect. And this was back in the days of when I was doing the research on the Money Masters. And so that would have been autumn of 1995. And that was before the World Wide Web, the internet and all that. And so we actually had to do research, heaven forbid, in the Library of Congress. And it took us 3 days to find this executive order. They just weren't that easy to find back in those days. And so when we found the executive order, you know, lo and behold, it didn't say anything like the Jim Mars version. You know, it very, very simply, the price of silver was going up. It was exceeding a dollar an ounce. Therefore, you could hardly have a silver certificate, which supposedly was convertible $1 of paper to $1 of silver. So they were phasing silver certificates out, not increasing them. And Kennedy was basically an internationalist, and so he absolutely would not have done anything against the Fed. So this was complete bunk. And as you know, I'm sure, as you go through and looking into subjects in depth, there are plenty of people out there who just try to make a quick buck from putting the most sensational spin possible on any topic. And those of us who, you know, value our reputations long term have to come swim through this sea of garbage to, you know, try to be sure that what we're saying is the truth. And so it's a very time-consuming process, and there's really not much money in it. But if you want to value your reputation long term, you have to do it. And so that's what we did, and we found out that it didn't have anything to add to the Federal Reserve topic whatsoever. And so, but I didn't include it in the, or did I include it in the Money Masters? No, I don't even remember. But in any case, it keeps popping up every single time I go somewhere and give a talk. Somebody will raise their hand and say, yeah, but Kennedy died because of his opposition to the Fed, and I have to go through and tell this story. So finally now, with the advent of YouTube, and I can put these little YouTubes up, you know, get the story straight. And YouTube is forever. It's a very, I say it's the most powerful political force in the universe at this point in time, and people just don't appreciate it.
Well, it's not always forever. I've had my videos removed, like 200 of them, but I also made a video back in April for the same reasons, because I got sick of telling the story over and over again about this executive order, which Johnson did not reverse. Because it actually limited who could issue silver certificates, what it really did. But you have a more authority on that than I do. You've done a lot more work probably before I was even born on this subject, so I'm glad you're saying it as well. But as you say, it's much harder to, when you debunk something that and it's not sensational, that doesn't spread quite as quickly or as far as and wide as when something is sensational and simple.
Right.
But you made a couple other updates to this report saying, okay, well, that's not why Kennedy was killed. But that doesn't mean the official story was true by any means. It's rather ridiculous. Well, they've changed it twice in the different investigations. But there were some interesting characters who are revealed in the Zapruder film and other films. You talked about the Umbrella Man. I've heard him dismissed as a protester against appeasement in Chamberlain. But who was this man, and why is he interesting?
Well, his last name was Witt. He was an insurance salesman in Dallas, and according to his testimony before the House Assassinations Committee in 1978, I believe, he said that, well, he was just out there trying to protest a German appeasement, and, you know, which is pretty odd. But if you look at the Kennedy assassination films, the various films of the motorcade, you see literally tens of thousands of people, and not a single person is carrying even a closed umbrella, much less an open one. But, you know, here this guy, just before the Kennedy assassination, seconds before the gunshots opened up, and way before the motorcade got right in front of him, he opens his umbrella and starts pumping it up and down. I believe that this was a signal to a well-organized assassination plot, a signal to the shooters. They had redundant capability. They had the Umbrella Man for visual, and they had another guy with a radio who apparently was his partner, whose identity we've never discovered. They merely referred to him as the Cuban, who was dressed in a bright baby blue jacket right next to Umbrella Man.
Which doesn't mean he was Cuban either, just that's his nickname.
Yeah, it's just his nickname. Nobody knows who the guy was. But he had a very large, expensive-looking walkie-talkie, so he was probably the radio control. But, of course, back in those days, 63, radio, two-way radios were not perfectly reliable, and whoever was behind this hit wanted redundant control to be sure that it went off as planned. And so they had the Umbrella Man for visual. And, of course, this is all speculation that I'm giving right now. But in any case, after the bullets rained down on Kennedy, which I think was actually one of the symbols of the umbrella, the Umbrella Man and his partner, the Cuban, everybody goes running, scattering, diving for cover, except these two guys. They just calmly sit down on the curb and wait for everybody to leave, and then they calmly get up and walk away in different directions. The Cuban stuffs his two-way radio into his back pocket, and the umbrella guy just disappears the other way back to his office, and then he testifies before the House Assassination Committee. These two guys were within 30 feet of when the fatal headshot hit. I mean, it was right in front of them, a little over one car length away, and yet the Umbrella Man testified before the House Committee that he didn't even know the president had been assassinated. Until he got back to his office when he heard it on a transistor radio. So he is totally incredible to me. So,
not only were they not running, they weren't horrified and shocked. They're like everyone, oh, the president's been shot and Connally's been shot. Maybe they, you know, a couple people have been shot and they're all screaming and running, diving. Some of them are running toward the book depository, some toward the fence or the grassy knoll, which I hate that name, but. And these guys are just sitting down, neutral expressions on their face, not horrified that they just saw people get shot right in front of them.
Yeah, and the Cuban, that's when the Cuban is seen talking on his radio and looking towards the grassy knoll to see if perhaps collaborators there had escaped. So it's pretty darn mysterious. In any case, I wanted to spend – a lot of people are asking me, why are you worrying about this, you know? Well, I grew up in this era, and I've kind of followed this story, but I've never written on it before. And I just want my grandchildren to – I want to lay down a signal flare for my grandchildren, because there's been so much smoke of disinformation laid in the water that nobody – a generation or two from now is going to, you know, pore through all these books to try to figure out what in the heck was going on. So I want to lay down a trail of breadcrumbs, essentially, for my descendants that this is the way, based on my experience, that I think you should look if you're going to look into this, if you're interested in looking into this. And so I've hit basically two key points in my little YouTubes, and that's I did two on the Umbrella Man, and I'm now doing a second one on the Grassy Knoll people, and I'm still trying to decide if I want to do one on Oswald the Patsy, but that gets into shakier information, so I'm not sure that I'm going to do that. I might just end it up with four totally on the assassination.
Well, one thing with Oswald that if I could reduce all, there's a lot of information, but one of the key points I could say about him is he didn't have any nitrates on his face after firing the gun, and the only way they could come up with a scenario of him doing it was actually someone else holding the gun for him as he shot. It was ridiculous. So he really, he seemed to be working with these guys, and he seemed to be a dangle for the Russians, and he's not a, wasn't just an innocent character that happened to work in a bookstore or anything, but he just was a patsy, as he said, when he could have, if he really was like an extreme communist or anything, the brief time he had on TV, instead of taking credit for it or giving a message, he says, "I'm a patsy." And then the fact that he gets killed as well by somebody with a very shady reputation adds to that. But yeah, it goes on and on. But for the Grassy Knoll,
you know,
you think that is more solid?
I think the Grassy Knoll stuff is absolutely solid. Of the 100, I forget the exact number, let's say it was 115 people that have been interviewed that reported what direction they heard the shots come from, about 30% heard them come from the Grassy Knoll. However, less than 5% of the people were closer to the Grassy Knoll than the book depository. So even though most of the people were over next to the book depository, still 30% of them heard shots coming from the Grassy Knoll. As far as Oswald the Patsy goes, there's just, like you say, there's all kinds of information. But, you know, you have these two very interesting photos of Oswald holding the rifle that eventually they claim he used. And why would somebody who was going to assassinate the president leave behind a trail of photos with him holding the rifle? That doesn't make sense in itself. But then when you examine those photos carefully, you see that it was just an old job of cut and paste, where they're cutting Oswald's face on top of this other guy's body. And there are two pictures, and you can see that the scale between the head and the body don't match. And you can also see the paste job right under the chin around the neck. So, you know, there's just so much obvious cover-up going here. And like I say in my
he left his wallet in three different places, one for Tippett, one in the theater, one that he had on. So, yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
I don't want to get a big tangent about that because I have another guest that's going to talk about that anyway. But, yeah, there's a lot on Oswald being a patsy. But I think to keep it simple, I think what you've done with this sort of signal flare approach is perfect. This is an irrefutable fact that doesn't have too many segues. And then here's another one. Here's an Umbrella Man and here's a Grassy Knoll. And, I mean, it's on film with Kennedy's head flying backwards that he was shot from the front. So, that's pretty obvious. But that film
right.
didn't come out until 7 years after he died because it was bought up by Time Magazine, run by C.D. Jackson, who, during the Second World War, was the head of the psych department for psychological
warfare. It was Time Magazine.
Yeah, he ends up owning both, though.
I see.
Yeah. So,
yeah, well, I remember waiting for the Zapruder film, and you know, it was finally came out, I believe, in 1975 was the first time it was displayed on television. You know, and without the Zapruder film, it was just lucky, I guess, because there were other films, three other films that were taken. Two of the two best ones were seized by the government. One was by the lady across the street in the direct line of fire. So her film, you know, included not only the headshot, but in the background would have included the muzzle flash from the gun. All of a sudden, FBI agents showed up at her work the next day or the day after and seized her film and told her that she had not had it developed yet, told her that they'll get it right back to her. Well, of course, that didn't happen. Then there was another guy on the other side of the street near the grassy knoll who reports that the shot came right by his ear, at least one shot and possibly two. And then a guy comes around with a gun and says, did you film that? And he says, yeah. And he says, give me the film. And so he gave him the film, and that was the end of that. But, you know, if it wouldn't have been – apparently they didn't see where Zapruder was sitting because he was sitting back up on the memorial. And so his film survived. And with Zapruder's film surviving, then they had to go through this elaborate cover-up of – you know, why somebody whose head suddenly gets blown back and their brain's blown backwards, how that could possibly have been done by shots from the rear, and they have to go through this elaborate cover-up. So without Zapruder, the mainline story would probably have been dominant.
Yeah, I think so. And that's what really, we already had the Warren Commission do an investigation, and then we had the Senate do another investigation, principally because I think this film is what kickstarted it, because with everyone seeing that on TV, they definitely wanted another investigation. And the conclusion was, officially, that they're based on acoustics, too, that there was probably more than one shooter. That was the official conclusion, that it was a conspiracy. That's been admitted.
Yeah, well, not only that, it was a conspiracy, and the CIA was held culpable in obstructing justice of the committee going after the facts. So that's pretty doggone damning. So you know, the reason I go after this is just that it's absolutely intolerable to me as a freedom-loving American that a group of some sort of intelligence folks, if not the agency as a whole, perhaps rogue people allied from all their days of hiring the mafia to try to kill Castro, to get Castro back out of Cuba so they could get their gambling casinos going back. That unholy alliance between the mafia and the intelligence community, people lived in fear of it. And I lived through those days in Washington, and there were a lot of people who were living in fear. I saw Shirley Chisholm, the first black congresswoman, at Dulles Airport one time, and I asked her, you know, this is before the House Assassinations Committee, I said, Congressman Chisholm, when are we going to get another investigation, you know, a real investigation of the Kennedy assassination? And she was a very dark-skinned individual, and I'll tell you, her face flushed almost nearly white. She was that look of fear in that woman's face from, you know, not knowing who I was, just coming up and asking her, when are we going to have a restart of the investigation of the Kennedy assassination? She said, oh, you don't want to open that can of worms again. So even she was just scared to death of these people, and that's just an intolerable situation in the United States.
Yeah, it seems Johnson seems to – the cover-up for the cover-up was that, yes, it was a conspiracy, but maybe it involved the Russians, and we just don't need this. It'll start a world war, so just blame it all on Oswald and shut up about it. But as you dig through, you know that they knew that that was not true. And that's not what they're really covering up. But I'm glad you made the point of the intelligence agencies working with the mafia, because some people scoff at that. But I would just point out from my lifetime, looking at from Iran-Contra to now with the conflict in Syria, that's the common modus operandi that they outsource to the Contras. They outsource to drug cartels in Mexico or Turkey or wherever. We've supported Jandala in Iran. We supported MEK. We supported the Mujahideen. We support al-Nusra. We even supported al-Qaeda at different times, all outsourced either through the CIA or ISI or Mossad or intelligence agencies. It's very common to work with criminal organizations for that, as Ali North called it, plausible deniability. And a lot of these same key figures, the Dulles brothers and so on, were involved in other assassinations in other countries as covert operations admitted in now by the CIA. So it's not a far-fetched thing to kill both the Kennedys, actually.
Yeah, I've never looked into the Robert Kennedy assassination, but the JFK, and it's not that I've been a great student of it, but growing up in Washington, you couldn't help it. Everybody was talking about it. There've been 1 or 2,000 books written on it, and I just want to lay down, a few 4 or 5 minute videos to help out my descendants in trying to wade through all this stuff should they become interested in it. That's all I'm trying to do.
Well, I think the investigations are moving a lot faster now because of the internet, where you can summarize books for people and you can get information very quickly, which was much harder before. You could read online. Like your work on the executive order, which you did the hard way, now you can Google that
Right.
in seconds. Anybody could say, all right, what did it say? Read it and realize that we're both telling you the truth. It limited who could issue silver certificates. It did not challenge the Federal Reserve. It increased the power of the Federal Reserve. Sorry.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And yet still, it is a very common misperception. That particular YouTube has had only 2,000 hits, and I know there are millions of people just in the United States who still believe this bunk.
Well, I wouldn't go off the hit count on YouTube because we've busted them censoring that. I don't know if it's a glitch problem or intentional or whatever, but sometimes when you get too much traffic at once, like all the day you release something, per se, and yes, it freezes at 301 or 5, but in the lag time, it doesn't always catch up with the proper numbers because their own analytics will have it higher than what it's showing on their own page if you have AdSense or a partner program. I guarantee more than 2,000 people have seen that video.
Yeah, it always stops at not necessarily 301, but in the first 10 digits of the 300s, it hits the what we call the 300 wall, and it's quite variable as far as when it jumps over that wall and starts giving relatively real-time numbers.
Yeah, well, it'll freeze in the between 301 and 309, and then it'll freeze at about 1,500, and then it'll freeze again at like 2,800, and so on. There's these points where it just stops. I've noticed that. I have some videos that are in the 100,000s. I have some that are about 2,000. They're all over the place. But the fact that I meet random strangers in Japan who know who I am from YouTube, it's got to reach more than just a couple thousand people on the video. So I'm absolutely certain of that. So don't worry about the numbers, and we're going to increase those numbers today anyway.
Well, you're a great person to talk to.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed all your work. Your film Money Masters, I was a child when I saw that, but it's like what Jeremy Bentham said, the scales fell from my eyes. Like I finally had something that put it all together for me, and it made so much sense once I understood it, central banking. And I kind of intuitively asked. I remember asking my parents that. This is also before the internet, so it was like, or when it was a baby anyway. So you had the Britannica basically to go to, and I asked why, what prevents them from just, making more money and loaning it out at interest? And like nothing, I guess. But it really was that simple about the quantity of money. But I have recommended that film to so many people to buy that. But now that you have the new film out, I get on that one. But the Jekyll Island
Yeah,
movie.
I think the new ones represent 15 more years, 17 more years of my thinking on the subject, and plus I'm kind of figuring out how to
Well,
make the message more effective and smaller.
it's shorter and the production's a little better too. And yeah, the message is more concise in that film. But I recommend both. I enjoyed both. You get a nice history lesson there too through everything. And I'm sorry that Executive Order 1110 always haunts the two of us and many others. But all I can say is just point at it and say, look, go read it yourself. There's no excuse now. There's Google. And I would ask those who have been promoting that myth that rather than trying to save face because you have been saying it for so long, do the right thing and just say, you know what? I was wrong. So what? This doesn't mean you're a liar or anything. It just means you're wrong. Just say I'm wrong and stop promoting that.
That is so good for you to say that, because yeah, it actually boosts your credibility when you can admit you're wrong. It's not a negative to your credibility.
I think so too. I mean, when I'm wrong, I just say, sorry, I was wrong. I make that very loud and clear, because I don't want people to think the wrong information, for one, and I don't really care who's right. I just care about what's right.
Yeah, well put.
I mean, it's how it ought to be, but certain people can't seem to admit they're wrong. Maybe that, I don't know. It's not just about saving face. Some people, when they've had a position for so long, that when there is contrary evidence to it, they rationalize their way around it. It's like a cult or something. But
well, it's like everybody thinks that if you're proven wrong once, that somehow people will point back to it and say, well, you were wrong here. But I mean, the point is that everybody's wrong all the time. Nobody's right all the time.
Yeah, especially on such complicated subjects. You know, it's there's an old French phrase saying, like, you know, people who don't do anything aren't wrong about anything, but that's because you're not putting your neck out there. So it's easy to criticize the people who are going out there on independent media and saying things. And so when they are wrong, you shouldn't be so hard on them, because they're going to be wrong sometimes. It's not deception. It's just mistakes. And they got to be able to.
What's the French phrase?
Oh, I don't want to get it wrong. I had to look it up, because I don't want to say it the wrong way, but I'll write it out. But
je ne parle français.
Well, I don't want to mess this up. I do that even with a quote in English. If I don't have it exactly, I'll say it's something like this. But yeah, it's something like that. But well, Bill, thanks for coming on again, and I hope we can talk thorium sometime. And I'll have you back anytime, really. I love the Bill Still reports, the Still reporting on the economy. I like the pun.
Yeah, well, I don't try to take myself too seriously, but I'm serious when it comes to the topic of freedom, and not just American freedom, world freedom. I'm all about national sovereignty, not just American national sovereignty, but Japanese national sovereignty, German national sovereignty, Chinese national sovereignty, Iranian national sovereignty. We have to uphold this concept of independent nation states, or we will surely fall into an ironclad world dictatorship.
That sounds so gloomy, but I do think things are turning around, especially because we have mediums like the internet, which have broken this sort of media monopoly, which made it so easy in the past for these central bankers to get away with everything. And now I don't think it's as easy. You're seeing movements all across the world, different rebellions and or springs, as they like to call them. Things are coming around, and if we keep pushing it, I do believe we can change things. I really honestly do, or I wouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, as long as we emphasize the nonviolent aspect, because of course there'll always be provocateurs trying to, you know, get us to do have a violent response, which of course they can use to discredit anything you say. So as long as we keep it nonviolent, we're always going to be very effective.
Excellent. Well, as soon as you get the film out about the grassy knoll, shoot that over to me so I can promote it. And if you decide to go into Oswald, send me a mail. I may be able to help you with that one.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you could give me a couple salient points.
I'll review whatever you do, and if I can add my 2 cents, then I'll do that. It'd be a pleasure.
That'd be great. Yeah, you're a lot of fun to talk to. Thank you very much.
Thank you.